Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Brains, Bibles, and Beyond.
Yeah.
We are getting nearer the end with our interview series with Brandon. Yes,
right.
Hopefully, you all have been enjoying it. Mm-hmm. And this is what, part four?
Well, it's the first part of the third conversation, making it part four of the five-part series.
All right. So, still lots of parts. All right. So... now we've beat that dead horse.
Yeah. You congratulations, you've made it this far.
Yes, really yes. Awesome. Good job. So please comment. If you've learned something, comment.
Yes.
If you haven't learned something, like and subscribe, and maybe you'll learn something next time.
Yes, right. That's good.
And make sure you share, five star, give it a thumbs up, or any other way you can support us.
If you're a YouTube person, you ring that bell, right,
after you subscribe. Oh, yeah, yeah. That way you get the new episodes. Yes.
Yes.
Because, I mean, why would you want to miss these smiling faces?
You have to make sure, well, and you have to finish the series.
That's true. You do have to finish the series.
And then go to the next
one. You've made it this far. Don't quit now.
Yeah,
don't you can do it. You can do it.
That's good stuff. All right,
let's get started.
Well, this long one, we need to burn some more coffee. You ready?
Ready?
We kind of mentioned this before a little bit. I mean, it was a quick just to mention. We didn't actually really discuss anything. So there was the famous, and this is a little bit off the top of my head right now, but the back in 2005, I believe it was, the Dr. Mary, and I think it's Schweitzer, maybe. I should have had this up in front of me, really. But she was the first one, I think, at least recorded, that had found soft tissue, right? You had the red blood cell. It was one of those deals where they thought, well, maybe some archaeologists or something cut themselves, but they found a nucleus in there, right? And that's not like human blood cells. And so they knew it was as of the T-Rex. And so since then, they've actually found other discoveries of different things, and maybe not the same magnitude. A lot of it, you know, there's like nerves or something that they last differently. And I think the big thing here was even the shock of her colleagues and things saying, no, you got it wrong. Because there's no way, that was the consistent answer, there's no way that that would last for that long, was the idea. So I just wanted to bounce that off of Brandon and see what his thoughts were with that. You know, with a human red blood cell, I have this information in front of me here, and it says if red blood cell, you know, it'll live like roughly 90 days before it dies just from the wear and tear in the body. It says if you take it out of the body, it'll die even sooner. And of course, I understand that you can have more ideal conditions for living, for sure, a lot more. Okay. I don't want to talk too much. We have to be concise here. All right. So, Brandon, I just want to bounce that off of you and see what you have to say about that.
I mean, I remember running across that, you know, like in a Discover magazine cover story when I was in a Barnes & Noble in 2005. I don't know if you both know what holiday, what anniversary we passed by just yesterday, actually, but just yesterday, June 11th, 2023, was the 30th anniversary of the showing of Jurassic Park in 1993.
Oh,
huh. I don't know if you guys celebrated as crazily as I did.
But that adds up just right, doesn't it?
Yeah. I bring that up just to say that I've grown up with the hope in the back of my head that perhaps I would live to see a dinosaur cloned and get to, you know, ride a dinosaur around the world solving mysteries or something. And so this was big news for me. And I remember being shocked by this and hearing exactly as you're saying, right? That everyone else saying like, what? That's ridiculous. So I had already, you know, stopped being a young Earth creationist when I read that. And so it didn't actually even occur to me that, oh, wow, this seems to be the sort of thing that would make much more sense if the world was not that much older. And then a creationist friend of mine brought it up maybe about a year ago, and I thought, huh, yeah, that's a really good point. That's a really, really good point. Okay, so I've got to say, in the time between then and right now, I have done exactly zero amount of research on this topic, but I've done some thinking about it. Can I lay on to you where I think everyone is going wrong with this?
Okay, yeah.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
So we all kind of walk around with this idea that Aristotle was basically right about everything. You know, Newton showed us that like an object in motion will tend to stay in motion, but Aristotle said like, oh, things kind of peter out. Well, that makes sense because Aristotle was looking at the world that we actually live in. Aristotle said things, I don't know, I could become some other good examples of bad things that Aristotle thought that really like seemed to match our ordinary existence, but like, you know, life on Earth and the biosphere is not ordinary existence for physics and chemistry and whatever, right? And I feel like this is one of those situations where we think, oh, like things just tend to degrade over time, you know, if they're out in the environment. But that's because we're surrounded by tiny little animals that want to eat us all of the time, right? So if you take blood out of us, what, blood cells, right? Like they're going to be devoured alive because they're delicious. Whereas if you take something, and you'd sort of hinted at this, right? More ideal situations. You take that same blood cell and you put it in a refrigerator, right? This is why we invented refrigerators, and why we invented deep freezers. And there are things that will stay in, you know, deep freezers for a really, really, really long time, where the problems that you actually get, right, is that the ice itself crystals become too big, whatever. Though if you flash freeze those, okay, so here's the way I think about this, but I don't know how accurate this is. Under the ground, it's cold, typically. And under certain situations, you can shut off bacteria from getting to something. We only know this because, you know, tissue, like not just tissue, but like impressions of tissue can be preserved for, you know, in fossils or whatever. That wasn't very clear, but whatever. You can lock something away from bacteria under some circumstances. So if you put something in the cold, dark ground and you hide it from bacteria, like, yeah, it makes sense to me that some molecules and even some cells or parts of cells, or even some like more tissue than that, like can under weird circumstances last, let us say, indefinitely. But I'm not a chemist. I don't know these things.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Very good. Well, how would, because you are the science teacher here. So I am kind of relying on you a little bit here. But I do know a little bit about like entropy. So what about entropy about things breaking down? Is it, you kind of said, were you saying, maybe clarifying point, were you saying in a vacuum, it's possible, like a true vacuum, it's possible for things to not degrade at all? Or are you just saying that it slows down so much that it's like super microscopic of degrading?
So it's you wouldn't want a vacuum in a situation like this, at least the vacuum of space, because then starlight, right, the sun's rays would you know, shake the space goo, the electromagnetic fields, and it would ripple the atoms in the molecules, and it would eventually tear them apart from one another. This is why astronauts need to wear a bunch of shielding, and why if we ever make a Mars colony, we're going to have to basically bury it underground because it doesn't have the atmosphere to protect them. So you don't want a vacuum. You want it really deep under the earth. And entropy, I mean, that would be, I have a hard time with like really defining entropy. I don't talk about it very much because it's so abstract, but entropy is reduced for molecules when they're very cold. So the colder it gets, the better it is. And there's a certain, if you imagine these, you know, a cell is made out of molecules and bund together in a certain way. The molecules will stay together in, sorry, the atoms will stay together in the molecules will stay together in the cell. They're all wiggling, they're all wobbling because they all have some temperature, right? They're not at absolute zero. But as long as it doesn't get over a certain temperature, their wiggling and their wobbling will not break away from each other.
You know what
Does that
temperature
make
that has to
sense?
be? Yeah. You know how
Oh,
cold
my,
that has to
well,
be?
it's going to depend on the. Yeah, so I definitely don't know because I didn't look into this. But it's gonna differ for every different type of chemical. There's a here, if I can just actually tell your listeners and you just about one of the coolest apps that I have, which is where I'm gleaning all of my knowledge from this. This is only for the iPad. Steve Jobs commissioned it for the iPad. So I apologize for that. But it's called Molecules, and you can go to the Gallery of Molecules, and you can take here. I'll take something fun like butane. That sounds fun. Sure, that sounds good enough. And
Explosive.
you can see it, and you can see it wiggling here. And I'm actually going to make it so I'm going to remove myself. At the bottom here, you have this temperature, and you could turn the temperature up. on it, and you can see how the wiggly makes it go faster. Well, you can imagine at a certain temperature, they're actually going to break apart. And I suppose before I was told, oh, this is also ridiculously slowed down. This is you can see the time on the other side. You can, oops, you can make it go slower, or you can, ah, come on, man, or you can make it go even faster. But and that's still ridiculously slowed down. You can, what am I trying to say here? It's cool. Oh, I was talking about the temperature that atoms need to break apart from a molecule, but really, here's cellulose. So this is going to be for plant cells, right? And this is at almost absolute zero. Here, that's at something a lot warmer. But really, it's going to be the molecules that are going to break apart from the other molecules in the cell and then the subcellular in the parts of the cell. That's probably gonna be your bigger problem for this. You can also grab ones and move them around, and it gives them temperature, and it's so interesting. Okay, I'll stop talking about that.
Does it
But it's
need to be does it
fun.
need to be like near freezing then?
The temperature that it started off at right there actually was, I think, yeah, this is I what 300 Kelvin or 400 Kelvin or something is like 0 degrees Celsius. So like this is basically literal freezing of water. All the way down is total frozen, and it's slowly shutting down and almost stopped. Okay, there, stopped. Almost stopped. There we go. Totally stopped. You know, it's dumb the way that we usually like represent molecules to people. Here's like a little science geek thing of mine. You know, we have these like stick and ball models. The point is that like that is an abstraction, and like always everything is jiggling. We don't usually think about that, but everything is jiggling, so if they can jiggle less, they will break apart less.
Okay. Okay. Let's see. What about as we're just exploring this, I actually don't have like an end game with this necessarily,
We
but
only got a couple minutes here, guys.
okay, you calm down, Nate. All right. So I think there's some sass there. Okay, no.
Oh, Nate.
What about like the animal's
Feel like you
own
could play the
bacteria?
music.
So yeah, maybe the music would have been better. Wait, so like it gets trapped in the sediment. You're talking about like blocking off things, right? That's definitely a big part of how there's fossilization. It has to be cut off from scavengers and all those sort of things, weather erosion and whatnot. But wouldn't like the animal's own bacteria still break it down? That was already in
Yeah,
there.
so then it has to be. So that's a fantastic question, and I actually have thought about that some. I think oftentimes about when I die and the bacteria inside of my intestines will just begin to eat me. Because they will be hungry.
I've never thought
So
of that.
I know that there are some fossil imprints of intestines. They're super rare, but we have some from some dinosaurs. It's really cool because you can learn a lot about an animal based on how long their intestines are, and how, in the shape too. So in that sort of situation, it must have been that they were buried and cooled down fast enough, right? That the bacteria were taken like a refrigerator, right? Like if the bacteria are taken below a certain temperature with a fridge, what is it? Like 10 degrees above freezing or something like that, 3 degrees above freezing. It's really close to freezing even with a fridge.
Yeah, like 4 degrees is the being like a food safety, the
Oh,
fridge
yeah.
has to be at 40 degrees. Like you shouldn't have it more than that. So yeah, you're
Okay,
right,
yeah.
2 degrees above
Yeah,
freezing.
so 8 degrees. Yeah, so if you could fix that, if you get it below that, then the I'm guessing that the bacteria inside of your intestines, which are, kind of designed to operate around 100 degrees Fahrenheit, would not be as at least as effective.
Okay. All right. Cool. Yeah, I just wanted to explore that a little bit, and it'd be cool to look into that. I know that they did a thing where they put some blood cells into like water, and obviously it was like bad, nothing in a few days. But then they put blood cells in with other like super iron rich red blood cells, and then it lasted for like a couple years. Which
Really
is far
interesting.
beyond what would normally, even in your own body, right? That'd be like far beyond. And so, yeah, just kind of thinking through that a little bit, but that's about as far as I got with it. So I was interested to hear your thoughts on that. Thanks.
All right,
Yeah, thank
Brandon.
you. This is fun to explore.
Yeah, what's your first question?
Okay, so I am proud of myself for. I was thinking through all the stuff we were talking about last time, and I realized that there's a way of expressing this in simple math, math that is simple enough that even I can understand it. I do not have a mathematics education. I used to be a math tutor, but like 10th grade math is about as high as I have ever wanted to get before. Okay, so here it is in a nutshell. What is that going on there? Sorry, just one second. I'm having a computer. Okay, now it's
That'll
obeying me. That will happen around here, especially. Okay, so this picture again.
Oh, yeah.
So here it is. It's the question of what are the odds that we always find any given species? I'm going to pick on Triceratops because they're fun and they were in Jurassic Park. So there you go. What are the odds that we always find Triceratops in the same layer? Now, right, according to the usual sort of ways of making sense of flood geocatastrophism, there's this sort of mixing, it's this very violent, tumultuous thing. And you had, I think, better than I've ever heard anybody else explored and been creative, and I mean that in a very positive way, and been like good, clever, like knowing things about lake sediments and whatnot that I did not know, making sense of why it could be that you tend to find certain fossils or certain animals' bodies, right, in certain layers. We explored the like maybe it's the smarter ones that run from land, run to the top of land. Maybe it's the ones that are the live in a drier area. There was another thing. I actually kept it, and it was a smarter. Oh, the faster, just the
Yeah, the
faster.
straight fast.
I remember the smart, you fast, the dummies. Yeah, that's good.
So I thought, okay, so this is good, and I appreciate you sort of advancing the conversation and my understanding of the other side on this. And then I realized math. Okay, so here's the idea. So let's say that we find the first Triceratops in, this middle layer, the meso, the middle life, the Mesozoic. Okay, so we'd say that's when Triceratopses lived. And then we say, okay, what are the odds that the next one we find is going to be in that same layer? Well, it could be in this layer, it could be in this layer, or it could be in this layer. So we'll say, it's like one out of three. And it turns out that we found at least two different independent Triceratops finds, and it has been in there. Okay, how about the next one? What are the odds that we find the next one in there? Well, it's another third. Okay, so how do you figure out, like, what are the odds that you find both of the next two in that one, as opposed to like one in the middle and one at the bottom, or one at the middle and one at the top, or in the Cenozoic, or whatever? Well, you multiply these together. This is kind of basic, like this is how you do probability sort of thing. Okay, so then I did a bunch of research to figure out, how many Triceratops finds have we made? And the answer is surely over 20. Sorry, it's not surely. It's almost certainly over 20 from this. But I didn't take all the time to like contact paleontologists or whatever. Okay, so then to do the probabilities of this, what you'd say is, what is 1/3 times 1/3 times 1/3 all the way, to the power of 20? So it's 1/3 to the power of 20, and it turns out that that is 1/3 3 trillion. So that is like whatever method or combination of methods that we hypothesize for why, even though the animals died all the time, died at the same time, or roughly the same time on land, why is it that we only find the big mammals up here and only find the dinosaurs here and only find the weird buggy things or whatever down here? I'm being a bit overly simplistic about this, which you can challenge me later on when we talk about living fossils. I think that'd be a great place to challenge the simplistic narrative on this. But like, you have to like explain, not like how does it do it most of the time, but how does it like beat these 1 in 3 trillion odds that you never accidentally have a Triceratops that's brought all the way to the bottom or is a little bit above that? And then I'm just randomly picking Triceratopses. There are certain species that only appear in one layer that we, have found literally thousands of. Even more than that, it's not just that we find Triceratops in the Mesozoic, it's that we always find them in the Cretaceous. So there's about 10 bands that are like that. So really it's 1/10/20. It's even worse than that. I did some research on this. This would be for T-Rex. T-Rex is only ever found in the very end of the Cretaceous, the Maastrichtian stage, which I'd never even heard of before. That's like one, so that's like about one hundredth of like the geological scale. And so that would be 1/100/20. That is a very, and that's just T-Rexes. So yeah. Okay. How clear was that? I don't even know how clear that was.
Oh, no, that was clear. I think it was good.
No, yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, makes sense. For sure. I mean, I do think that's awesome. I don't necessarily think it's a problem, because even from the beginning, we both agreed that you would find the similar animals in the similar spots, you know, kind of a thing. Weren't too thrown off by that. You know, I probably am a little more open to things being out of place. The idea of there, well, there could be. I try not to make an argument from silence, though. I try not to say, well, you know, we haven't dug everything, so there could be. You know, that is a possibility, but I wouldn't want that to be my foundational
Yeah,
argument for
right.
sure.
That's not going to convince anyone.
That would just be like a quick thought and move on. That's what's going on there. But I would stick to the method of, as things came into waves, the mega sequences of destruction. I think that as the flooding, if volcanoes erupting and stuff, and as all of that was moving around, the big hurricanes and whatnot, I think overwhelmingly a lot of things were destroyed. There was things that were trapped quickly in other places. They would have stuck together, certain animals sticking together. What we don't know is, as far as my biblical worldview here, we don't know what the earth was like before the flood. There would be a lot of unknowns there. And so I think the tricky part is to look around today and say, well, it must have been, you know, and that would be a faulty thing to say. We do see that there was, like, you know, you have, just to kind of get an idea of the world, I mean, it was a bit different. You have those mammoths with, like, even green vegetation in them still, frozen solid, right? And so, you know, it's like, wait a minute, that's Siberia. What in the world's going on there? You know, so you think things like that, you'd see that there was definitely a different kind of a climate and whatnot. We wouldn't have had those. It seems that we would not have those ice caps at all. That would have been triggered after the flood, and just to create everything differently. I think it's very interesting, and I like to pursue that. I would say at this point, it wouldn't be enough to throw me, because my model's open to that kind of a thing. But it is fascinating, and I do want to explore that more. Absolutely. I really appreciate that. Even last time when you brought up a little bit of that, and, you know, I like how you added the probability this time. And boy, you can't escape that math. So there's definitely, I think, the proving, I'm gonna say things wrong here. The thing that is really awesome is that you have totally made concrete that there is something you cannot ignore, that this must be investigated. And I like that. I want to do that some more. I'm open to the idea, though, that what we have found has only been from a couple different movements in the catastrophic movements of everything. And so I'd be excited to see what else is to come. And I'd say that there are, I think that there's enough talk that there could be some things out of place, but we haven't spent time to look at that enough. That'd be a side thing for another time. Those anomalous fossils, that was called, the out of place things. Yeah, there's one of those things I was supposed to look into, and I didn't do it. So shame on me. Shame
That's
on me.
okay. That's all okay. Let me just
And it
say
could.
for all the listeners, like this is I love your attitude of we should keep looking. And I totally agree with that. This is something where, you know, like you can buy a rock hammer for $30 on Amazon, but you don't even need it. You can just go to like wherever there's some home construction near you on the weekend. I'm not recommending that people technically break the law and do this or anything, or a rock quarry on the weekend. I didn't say that. And you can find fossils, and it's really easy. And you can like look up, like, oh, like what would I expect to find here? And am I finding anything that's anonymous, right? Like power to the people. Like we can crowdsource this stuff. This is we can have fun with this.
That's good.
And
I like that
if
you
you
brought
do,
statistics.
document it so that we can
Yeah.
believe you.
Yeah.
So,
Okay.
Joel, you're next.
Okay, yeah. So, and this one we started talking about, and this one, I remember you even gave some compliments to the young Earth crowd for this one. That's the polystrates category. And so I like, it's kind of our, it's an interesting thing. It's kind of a young Earth word, if you will. But for those out there, polystrates, pretty straightforward. I mean, poly meaning many, strates for the strata, the layers, right? So the idea is that there's a fossil here of some kind that's actually in multiple layers of strata. And there's what that's like one of the most
Yeah.
famous. Is that
I've
the
seen
Nova
that picture
Scotia?
before.
I think it's the Nova Scotia one, maybe. That's
That sounds right to me. Yep, it is.
yeah, so that's one you usually see, actually. I think it's like the most popular guy. Because I think it's kind of beautiful. There's actually more than just trees. Trees are the most popular thing. But any fossils that would go through multiple layers. It's really interesting stuff. But trees, I mean, boy, you have just tons of them. I mean, just all over. These polystrates are actually all over the earth. We even have some over in the eastern part of the United States and even in Alabama. Yeah, so that's kind of a neat thing. Well, I used to live in Alabama, so it's kind of neat for me anyways, but maybe I'll have to go. I don't know. I don't remember where in Alabama. I'll have to go check it out. I don't remember what it was. I just remember seeing Alabama. I thought, what? Alabama? Okay. I used to tell people I lived in LA, lower Alabama. It was Mobile. So anyways, just give me some immediate feedback and what you think about polystrates in general. And then I might go to some specific examples. Actually, I will go to some specific examples. Yeah, go ahead.
Sure. So you're gonna roast me on the specific examples because I hadn't prepared those. So that's good. But I'm gonna enjoy just the
Not a
opportunity to
roast,
speak
not a roast. Okay.
with that. Okay, sure. So this was fun for me because I ran across, I remember citing this picture when I was in eighth grade and was assigned, as I talked about before, to the young Earth creationist side, or at least the the Earth is old side, in my public school science class debate, and never ended up kind of going back and refiguring out, like, what was the story behind those things? Even when I became an evolutionist a couple of years later, and or at any other time since. So it was really fun when I first ran across you and ran across you and Nate and listened to one of your podcasts from, I don't know, 6 months ago or something, and you mentioned polystrate trees. I'm like, man,
Oh, yeah.
what is going on with polystrate trees? So I looked it up. I will say, just because I need to dish crap on my own side here, right? Look at this, just the snarkiness of this Wikipedia article. The word polystrate is not a standard geological term. This term is typically found in creationist publications. Stupid, just awful.
True.
And then when they finally get around to saying, like, in proper geology, such fossils are referred to as either upright fossil trunks, that's not the worst in the world, upright fossil trees, that's not the worst, or T0 assemblages. What? What? That's better than polystrate? Poly, many, straight, layers. That's the perfect word for it. They're just, this is just so indicative of the irritation of the geological profession, how they use all of these big words. I love geology. I had a really hard time reading this Wikipedia article and actually understanding it. And in the end, I didn't understand lots of parts of it, right? One of the joys of young Earth creationist literature is that it expresses scientific ideas in ways that naturally fit into people's minds. So congratulations.
Well,
Okay,
thanks.
so yeah, it's just like evolution would do better on the market if geologists read more young Earth creationists authors and tracks and websites and could just copy their style from there. Okay, so that said.
Okay.
So the standard geological answer for these trees in specific, and the challenge me and some of the other things, is that, and I was sort of shamed that I hadn't ever thought of this before. No one ever said that every single layer is millions of years old. In fact, I don't think that there are any layers that in and of themselves are millions of years old. There's an entire branch of geology that's given to how do you like look at like how fossils or whatever, like rocks, sedimentary rocks exist, and backhack from that what the best guess is for like how this was formed, right? Because all sedimentary rock used to be muck, which is still blows my mind, but it's like the one thing that young Earth creationists and mainstream geologists agree on. So,
Right.
like there are different situations of you can have. I mean, I don't know what kind of rock this is, but I'm gonna guess it's muck rock. I guess it could also be fallen ash from a volcano. That happens sometimes.
Muck
But
rock, yeah.
like you have like a river come through and it piles a bunch, like one day, like a big flood, right? And it goes, right, and it just dumps a bunch of mud somewhere. And then, like a few days later, right, it kind of hardens. So you get these two different layers, right? And then you can like see, even sometimes you can see how these flows came from different directions, which I think would be interesting to try to guess at how that would happen in a big flood, sort of like a one giant flood situation. But you get all these layers and the tree dies, right? So, but a stump can stay for a long time. I know of whole trees that are dead. And they're in a lake as I drive from Minneapolis to Fargo. But I've been looking at these same dead trees for maybe 15 years now, and I don't think they're going anywhere. So you have time with a tree to get some of that. You even have situations where these trees, and this is like way beyond my ability to understand exactly what's going on. So here, let me just report what I hear about this. But you can see that the tree, its roots died. The tree seems to have died. Except then you can see new roots growing in it. And then eventually the whole tree died. So I would be interested if this is true, and I don't understand enough about geology or plants really to understand this, but understand how like that sort of secondary growth or whatever could have happened in a flood situation. But we can but ignore that because I don't have any strong stance on that. I'm just repeating what I think I understand from a
Sure.
poorly written PD article.
Yeah, there's definitely different situations. I would also not say that every single polystrate fossil would definitively defend a young Earth either. I wouldn't say that either. I think that there's ways it could have happened outside of even the global flood, perhaps. Because there's even you look at I would have the position I'd say, well, mountains came from the global flood, and then you would point out somewhere like volcanic mountains or something like that. You go, well, this definitely happened afterwards. I go, well, yeah, those right. So there's always these other situations that are happening,
Makes sense.
and I'd be okay with that too. I think it's neat to explore the new roots idea, how there could be new roots, exactly when that would have happened. And what conditions led to that? That is interesting. What I like to look at the polystrates is, in general, you're thinking, okay, went through these layers, so obviously they can't be, like 100,000 year layers, right? And I like that you pointed out that no one really believes that a layer is like millions of years. That's absolutely true. Which I think is a big misnomer among the young Earth crowd, those that aren't as academic, and they would think that each layer would be representing millions of years, that that would be what is taught. I always think it's very important to accurately reflect what is being taught. And so, yeah. So usually, though, I hear a lot of tens of thousands of years for a layer. And maybe around 100,000 for a layer. I've heard that quite a bit as well. Those are common, but yeah, nothing close to a million even.
What's
Would you
interesting
agree
is
with
I
that?
think that, oh, I'm sorry.
No, I just asked, would you agree with that?
No, not at all.
Okay, go
But
ahead.
maybe I'm wrong about this. The one situation that I can imagine, I'm not a geologist, that a layer could take even 1,000 years to form might be, I don't know, like on in the desert where there's just a bunch of dust and sand kind of blowing around slowly. But like when I think now about layers, I think about them forming in hours or minutes. You get a big
Oh.
of, I don't know if that I don't know if my microphone was able to pick up the kind of
Yeah.
mouth squelching sound that I was trying to make there, of a big rainstorm coming and sloshing about a bunch of mud, right? This like it's just important to like this there's nothing magical. I think that was when I was a kid, like, oh yeah, I was like this weird situation went, no, it was just muck. How long does it take to deposit an inch of muck? Not thousands of years. Thousands of seconds, perhaps, but
Okay, well that's interesting
That makes sense,
because
yeah.
I definitely have seen it where it was presented as tens of thousands or even around 100,000 years. But there's this one, it's seven layers of rock, and there's these jellyfish. Now, perhaps people don't understand how rare, how difficult it would be to actually fossilize a jellyfish, being, jelly, not having those bones and whatnot. And there's several of these jellyfishes, a school, if you will, a school of jellyfish. They always, float together, kind of thing. And previously, they would say that they're roughly about 100,000 years for a layer. The seven layers together would be roughly 1 million. So however that works out, actually. And then they find the jellyfish. And what I've heard the old Earth explanation for that would be that a jellyfish would get fossilized, and then later on another one would be, kind of thing. So this would
Sure.
be considered a polystrate because the idea is that these had to have been together. These had to have been at the same time. It would be even more, pretty crazy to have several jellyfish all fossilized at different points in time, but in the same place when they're actually super rare to be fossilized. There's a lot of difficulty there.
So this is good because I know nothing about this. I'm looking for fossil jellyfish polystrate on Google Images or Bing Images right now. Bing Images is better than Google Images. People should know this. And I'm not coming up with the picture that we're talking about here. So just go ahead and send me that later, right? Like
I
you don't
did,
ever need to
yeah.
talk about it. I want to know this picture. This is great. And so if we see two, interesting events like jellyfishes being fossilized one above the other, which is to say like them buried in ideal situations. Then I don't know, like maybe it's a cove that floods with fresh water once a year and kills the jellyfish and they sink to the bottom and the silt in that area just happens to be so good. And so it's like, 7 years in a row. I'm really making this up. But so I would be, this is just to say that like that's a great fossil to look more into. Everyone in the audience right now, like should be looking into this. This is great.
So actually, all the examples I've gotten from that one page I sent you, I can link it to when we finally get this posted. There'll be a link there as well. Because they actually do good documentation. A couple of examples. I'm just going to throw them out there. You don't have to necessarily have a rebuttal. I just want to throw them out there. If you
Okay.
want to push back, please do. But another
I'll be
example of
fast. Don't worry,
that.
Nate.
Say it again, sorry.
He said it'd
And I'll
be
be fast. Don't worry, Nate.
fast. Okay,
We're
so
going long here.
another example of that would be like these 40 whales buried in the desert in Chile. And so like I know some Smithsonian people, old Earth people, of course, they suggested that this happened actually four times to get all the 40 whales in the same spot. The kind of same idea. When these things group up, it tends to be the thing where, well, this must have been this, this must have occurred. Must have means, so it still fits everything. In my opinion. But so a few of those times, well, is this really always the explanation? Could it have actually been all at once? And another one, you have the roughly 80-foot whale at about a 60-degree angle, kind of resting there, and it was totally covered in that diatomic earth. Those little tiny, like super super duper duper tiny tiny, like microscopic little creatures there that die and build up. Well, it's supposed to
Diatoms, yeah.
be, let's see, 1 millimeter per decade to build up. And this 80-foot whale, 60-degree angle was totally covered, totally in fossilized in these things. And of course, this is others that have been, done that too. What it shows is the rapid depositing of the materials, which have actually surprised me there with a quick agreement to the rapid depositing. But what I tend to see then is that it's here, it's there, it's here, it's there. There's 170 tadpoles that were fossilized together, didn't have time to, become frogs, whatever. Things like that. It's over and over again. And when you take those polystrates, a true one, And you'd say, well, of course, this is, well, I mean, no matter what, I didn't mean to say that. So a polystrate, any of those layers there that it would be in, that had to have been rapidly deposited quickly. And then you would have to follow then those layers. So the entirety of those layers then would have to be rapidly deposited. It's the same layer. And then another idea is, as if you're looking at the YouTube, let's see if I can do this kind of like, so you have these layers that kind of converge like this. So you have one coming and then another layer kind of goes like this, you know, kind of, wait, see here. There, I got a camera, right? Okay. As it comes in, then, you know, they kind of overlap. So then you go, well, that had to have been quickly too, because if this whole thing's quick and this is coming through it, it would have to be a quick thing at the same time because they've hardened together, you know, that sort of idea. So we go through it and we start to think to ourselves, well, so then what wasn't rapid, you know, as far as these layers go, even things being covered in limestone, supposed to be 1 inch every 4,000 years is the uniform, build to that. And so you have these, you know, nonaloids. Have you mentioned those, the nonaloids?
I've mentioned the other kinds of ancient armored squids.
Okay, yeah, I thought you did. I was pretty sure of it. I wasn't sure if you actually used that term or not, but
I never use that word. I don't know why.
well, anyways, these cool looking creatures. And we both agree those are cool looking things. Covered in limestone. You know, how does that happen quickly? You know, these things like that. How does that happen? And so just to put it out there for people to investigate, really, to check this stuff out. I will put the post out there so you're seeing the same information that I'm seeing.
Well, here, let me respond to all of that, which is to say that
Yes.
I totally agree with you. That stuff is all really cool. And I think that the proper thing to do is to recognize how cool it is and then get curious and then to look, at the specifics of it. And, now that we, sorry, I'm like this major GPT enthusiast now. I teach courses on it. And like, I'm doing all of my scientific research from there. And I just like, everyone in your audience should go to ChatGPT and use it. And then from what it tells you, right? Then you go to Wikipedia, then you can go to Encyclopedia Britannica, then you can go to a bunch of other places, YouTube, whatever, and find some other things. But like, yeah, this is great. We should all be on this. This is, and if this conversation does anything, right, it is to bring us to the wild and weird and woolly specifics of what the heck is going on with these rocks around us.
Yeah.
So, yay.
Yeah, I like that. We can move on to
Yes.
Brandon's question.
Oh, mine is,
You're
mine's the next one, the footprints. Okay, so I was out looking for fossils with my daughter, which is a thing that I do frequently. And I had this wah, where I realized that there is, I think, something that everybody agrees is true about rocks. And it actually comes into, which is footprints. We find footprints in rocks, not just like individual footprints, but like oftentimes like the track of an animal, sometimes over a fairly large distance, fossilized, into the rock, hardened into the rock, a lot rock layers. This obviously comes up sometimes with the Paluxy tracks. I mean, the one that's in Glen Rose Canyon. I'm getting those names confused in Texas. There's a famous piece of the creationist evolutionist argument about finding some dinosaur tracks from the Jurassic, and I think that's right, that maybe seem to have like human footprints kind of inside of them, which is an interesting sort of thing we could have talked about, or people should look into it themselves. There's some good YouTube videos on this, I think.
Sure.
There are YouTube videos. I like them. I think that you will like them too. But people, everyone agrees that okay, there are these footprints that are fossilized in different layers of rock. It occurred to me that, wait, how the heck does that make sense if the layers of rock came at one time in one giant flood? Color me still skeptical of that we could have these sort of neat layers of rock that are consistent across different parts of the world, that correspond to these different eras, and in my mind, whatever, that are all laid down in one giant flood. I know that they can give you some things that are kind of like layering, but I'm still a bit skeptical on that. But Joel, you did a really good job last time of getting me into the, well, but maybe sort of thing. But grant that, totally grant that. How are you going to get footprints that are fossilized in that? And you'll be happy to know that I did some research today. Not research. ChatGPT helped me. And
Yeah.
So this is from the Triassic, no, the Permian, which is before the dinosaur period. This is found in Nevada.
Okay.
These these footprints of, I don't know, I don't know how big these are, but these look kind of frog-like or salamander-like to me. So right, I don't, I this is not my field.
How much
Here's
is that
something that
magnified?
Utah from the
Okay.
Triassic, and I want to point out that right, like these are different layers of rock on here. Here's one from Connecticut, probably a Dilophosaurus. That's the spitter from Jurassic Park, if you remember. They didn't really do that, probably. We have no reason to assume it. Cretaceous, some sort of tyrannosaurid or something like that. This one's in Connecticut or Texas. I
Right.
actually want to go to this site next year. I'm visiting some friends probably who to see the eclipse at their parents' home
Those
in
great
Texas.
people.
And it seems, yeah. And then some from the one of the top layers, the Pleistocene from New Mexico, White Sands, New
You had
Mexico.
two left feet.
I don't know
Oh,
this
Morris.
one.
That
A
two
dog
people
looking.
next to each other walking. Oh man,
This
it's probably
one
a
looks left to me, and this one looks right.
and
But
then
then this one looks right to me.
yeah,
Yeah, that's, yeah. I don't know what's going on there.
and
And
the
the
other
other
one
one's great.
looks left.
The other one's left as well. Yeah.
They must be striding
Yeah.
directly in front of the other foot and two guys next to each other.
This is exactly the kind of attention to detail that we, that this sort of debate just like all of a sudden makes everything seem sort of exciting and enchanted. Like, oh, if only we look and spot the details, then we can figure out everything.
It could be
So,
just like
I mean, like,
sneaking, you know, like one foot in front of the other. You're sneaking.
they're probably hunting dinosaurs.
They're hunting
I'd
dinosaurs.
be
What's going
sneaking.
on? I will point out
Yeah.
that no dinosaur fossil has ever been found in the Pleistocene layer. I know that
Yeah.
from your perspective, maybe they were there, but I'm just going to point that out. But my argument here is literally just that. How do you get footprints like 300 feet down in the muck that is being churned up by the global flood? I've never heard anybody talk about this before. I've never heard anybody ask about this. I'm very excited that this is actually like, I may have unearthed a legitimately novel question in the debates, and it's very old debates. Any thoughts on this at all?
Yeah, no, when you, yeah, that's kind of a new thing. I haven't really thought through that. And it intrigues me to death. And so, I do want to look, I'm almost afraid to even say anything off the top of my head because I'm sure it would be moronic. But, yeah, I want to actually look to see
Here,
what the answer
can we
is.
just like say like let us just accept the moronic things. So here we can even go back and forth if you want, just like offering up. Here, let me offer one. Because I this because I tried to like put on my list, like, okay, like how would I explain this? Someone's buried in the muck, really deep in the muck, and like they're kind of moving in the muck. The problem I think with that is that there are definitely some fossil tracks that show like one dinosaur following another dinosaur. Like you see these big herbivore tracks, some sort of long neck, and then you have like a medium-sized carnivore track following it. Well, I don't know if we know which one was technically following the other one. I can imagine that you might know that based on like how they kind of overlap each other or something. I don't know if we know that, but you can imagine that like probably an herbivore is not like, a carnivore went this way. I believe I shall follow it. But it's easy to imagine that the opposite of that. Anyway, you find these like really long tracks. And I can't imagine like somebody buried in mud or animals buried in mud and giving us those long tracks. So that was my one moronic thing. Do you guys have any that you want to just suggest just to help the creativity flow?
The only thing I can think of off the top of my head is just the idea that there was some kind of wet ground that you know would be softer, like sand, some kind of dirt, and it'd be wet enough where the animal is walking along, it makes its tracks, then you would have the catastrophic flood, the layer of sediment comes through. Not so hard this one to rip up the entire layer like maybe he's done before, but this one just kind of fills it in, pushes along and fills it in. And so then it makes this, and then with other sequences coming through, it could rip it around and perhaps it stayed together.
So this is good. Maybe this is going to save it, because what I had thought previously is that the top layer, whatever the top layer is, right? Like that's fine. That one makes sense. And I felt like the bottom layer you might be able to make sense of that too. The problem is all the ones in the middle layers, which is why I wanted to find a whole bunch of those, and and try to make sense of those. So I did the Permian, which is I think this one right here. So there's some footprints of the amphibian five toed right in here, and then there's some of the Triassic. I forget what they looked like, but then there's the Dilophosaurus in the early Jurassic, and then there is something in the Cretaceous, and then there's the human ones, and the I don't know how to draw footprints, it turns out. And that person
Pretty
only
good.
has four
That's not bad.
toes. Yeah, okay.
Better than me.
Thanks. So the question is, how could they be? And like, this is not
Have three
like
toes?
my strong guess is that we've probably found many fossil footprints, not just in each of these layers, but like in like the sub layers in each of these. But this, you know, might become some project of mine to really sort of chronicle this. So how to do it? Yeah, I guess my question for you then is how to do it in the middle layers. Or I guess, sorry, that sounds too challenging. Like the model that you just the hypothesis that you just gave, which you said did not sound very smart, does it fail totally in the middle layers? Do we have to jettison it? Or is there any way that you guys can think of saving it? Your answer does not seem to sound smart. My hunch is that this is actually unexplored ground in young Earth creationist literature. And so like this is itching. At some point, right? If like we keep talking, if you and I keep talking about this, you know, to our own audiences, like somebody will have to write the creationist rejoinder to this.
Yeah, they
So
have
this
to.
is a market opportunity for any of your listeners who want it.
Well, guys, that wraps up another episode.
Yeah, we had Brandon ending there with a little bit of a challenge on, to figure something out. My big push here is in agreement that we need a lot more contributors. And so
Yeah.
get study and pick anything.
Don't be a leech.
Don't be a leech, right? Yeah,
Yeah.
contribute to the whole conversation. And like, we need more people writing in different ways, or any kind of a method of communicating ideas and thoughts and challenges and all that sort of thing. Even just asking good questions can be a big help to the community.
Yes, absolutely. So we will see you next time, guys. We
You
have
bet.
one more episode in this series. And once again, if you like what you hear, please leave us a positive
Contribute.
comment. If you
Yeah.
don't like what you hear, just keep on listening. Something will happen.
Yeah, talk to us. It's good. Like, follow, subscribe, all those
Thumbs up
things
too.
you know to do.
All
Yeah.
right. See you guys later.